Welcome to the Fredcast Cycling Podcast for the week of September 24th, 2007. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. In today's episode, and in every episode this week, I'll be bringing you news and interviews from the 2007 Interbike Expo in Las Vegas, Nevada. Before those interviews today, I have just a little bit of news, and then following the interviews, a couple of upcoming rides that you're going to want to know about. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Interbike edition of the Fredcast. The Fredcast is brought to you this week by Cambria Bicycle Outfitters. Cambria Bicycle Outfitters is going to be here in Vegas looking for the best products to make sure that they're able to offer you everything you're looking for when it comes to your bicycle needs. For a special deal for Fredcast listeners, go to www.thefredcast.com and click the Cambria Bicycle Outfitters link. Cambria Bicycle Outfitters, they outfit the world. Well, welcome back to another episode of the Fredcast. Thanks for listening. We're glad to have you with us. Sitting here in my palatial suite, that's sarcasm, folks, from Las Vegas, Nevada. I've been here for a couple of days, been at the Outdoor Expo, trying to get a sense of what the bicycle industry, especially for roadies, is going to look like over the next couple of months, and certainly over the next year. And I've got a couple of interviews coming up a little bit later, and then we go to the actual trade show floor tomorrow, bring you some interviews from there as well. I've got a number of appointments set up for that, and we'll be doing a live edition of the Spokesman Cycling Roundtable podcast. If you haven't listened to that, it's at www.the-spokesman.com, and we're going to have all the spokesmen in the studio tomorrow, as well as a number of well-known bloggers from the bicycle community. So that should be a really interesting thing. Plus, we've got the Shimano YouTube competition that Carlton Reed from bikebiz.com and quickrelease.tv set up, and we'll be judging some of those videos along with celebrity judges that include the spokesman, as well as Bob Roll and Phil Liggett. So that should be just a lot of fun. Now, before we get to some of those Interbike interviews that I promised you, just a little bit of news from the world of professional bicycle racing. First off, as promised, the results of the 2007 Vuelta a España, and this time it went to Denis Menchov from Team Rabobank. Now, Menchov is listed in the record books as a two-time winner of the Vuelta a España, but this was his first time actually atop the first place position on the podium. And the reason for that is that in 2005, Menchov was handed the title after Roberto Heras was stripped of the title for testing positive for EPO. Said Menchov after the race, quote, "A solid win was important. Now maybe I can crack the Tour de France too." So Menchov took first place. Carlos Sastre from Spain was 3 minutes 31 seconds behind him in second place. In third, Samuel Sanchez, also from Spain, 3 minutes 46 seconds back. 10 seconds behind him, Cadel Evans from Australia. And in fifth, Ezequiel Mosquera, also from Spain, 6 minutes 34 seconds back. In the points competition, first place for the green jersey went to Daniela Benatti from Italy and Team Lampre, 147 points. But with 135 points in second place, it was Denis Menchov, followed by Samuel Sanchez, Alessandro Petacchi, and then Cadel Evans. For the King of the Mountains jersey, Denis Menchov took that as well with 90 points, followed by Jurgen van Gulen from Belgium and Team Discovery, 78 points. In third, Carlos Sastre was 69. In fourth, Franco Pellizzotti from Team Liquigas, 63 points, and with 54 points in fifth place, Samuel Sanchez. For the teams, first place went to Costa Parna, second, Euskaltel Euskadi, third, AG2R, fourth, Team CSC, and fifth, Team Liquigas. Now, there are two events left in the 2007 Pro Tour. The first is Paris Tours on October 14th, and then finally, finishing out the season, the Giro di Lombardia on October the 20th. Current standings in first place from Italy, Danilo De Luca with 242 points. In second, Cadel Evans from Australia with 227. And with 191 points, Alberto Contador from Spain and Team Discovery is in third. For the team competition, Team CSC is leading that with 363 points, followed by Cas de Parña with 322, and then finally Team Liquigas with 320 points. As far as the countries go, well, if you look at the rankings from the Vuelta, it's pretty clear that Spain's had a pretty darn good year, and they are leading with 789 points, followed by Italy with 746, and then very distant third, it's Australia with 474 points. Now, between now and Paris Tours, of course, it is time for the Road Worlds. That's taking place this week, September the 25th through the 30th in Stuttgart, Germany. There are links in the show notes for that, and I will be bringing you news as it happens right here on the Fredcast. Now, as I told you, I only had a little bit of news, and that is it for today. And, of course, the reason is we're here at Interbike, and really, Interbike is the news this week. So the entire show, the next couple of shows that will happen, will be all about Interbike. But before we get to that, I want to remind you that we have this contest going on, and it's sponsored by The Sock Guy. The contest is for you to design the next edition of the Fredcast socks. Now, you only have until October 15th. That's your deadline. Make sure that you get your designs into me by email by midnight Mountain Time, October the 15th. Now, we've talked about the rules before, but briefly, all designs will become the property of the Fredcast, and the winner is going to receive a great prize package courtesy of The Sock Guy. Let's talk about what that prize package is, because it's awesome. The winner of the contest is going to receive two pairs of Fredcast socks, the new ones, the ones that the winner designs, along with a pair of any other style of Sock Guy socks, a pair of Sock Guy Elite Tech socks, a Sock Guy base layer, a pair of Sock Guy arm warmers, Sock Guy booties, and Sock Guy cover socks. Now, the winner is going to get to choose the styles, colors, and sizes. So start working on your designs right away and be sure they arrive no later, once again, than midnight, October 15th, 2007, and that's Mountain Time here in the United States. And keep in mind, the socks we're going to be designing this time will have the 3-inch Sock Guy cuff. That's what you want to design for. Simple rules. If you're me, my wife, either of my daughters, either of my sisters, my father or my mother, you simply can't enter. And all designs will become the property of the Fredcast. I can't wait to see what you design, and I can't wait to wear the socks that you design. So get those designs in as quickly as you can. Okay, so let's get to those interviews that I've been doing over the last day and a half here at the outdoor demo at Interbike. And before we get to them, I want you to understand that Interbike, as well as the outdoor demo, they're huge. There are so many exhibitors. It is physically impossible for one person to get out there and see every single exhibitor that's out there. So what I'm doing is I'm bringing you a taste of the show, and I've brought you some of the bikes that really have been the buzz of the show, and I've also brought you a couple of items that maybe you've never heard of before, or maybe that you didn't expect. So that's what you're going to be hearing over the next couple of days here on the Fredcast. Now, before we get to those interviews, let's just talk a little bit about, well, what it is we're talking about. Because I keep saying outdoor demo, and there's every possibility that some of you may not know what we're talking about. The outdoor demo is a 2-day event that precedes the actual trade show, where bike companies, component companies, accessory companies, and everybody in between and even outside of that shows up at Bootleg Canyon near Boulder City, which is near Lake Mead in Nevada. They set up their tents and they set up booths and they bring products that you can try. So how does this work? Well, you walk up to the start of the expo and you have to sign a waiver that says if you should get injured, you know, you're not going to sue anybody. And they give you a couple of cards. They give you a green card for a bicycle and a couple of orange cards for accessories. And what is mind-blowing is that you can walk up to a booth and you can say, I want to ride this bike, say, for instance, a Trek Madone, which I rode today. And it's a few $1,000 bike, right? And all you do to ride it is hand them your green card and you hand them your pedals, they put them on, they adjust the bike for you, and then you can take the bike out for as long as you like simply by giving them that green card. It really is amazing. And it's one of the reasons why whenever we talk to Rich Kelly from Interbike, whenever we have him on The Spokesman and when I've talked to him in person, I always ask him, is there any chance that you can turn this into a consumer show? Because this would be the ultimate opportunity for you to go out and be able to try every bike that you wanted to try. So if you want to ride a road bike, they have a road loop that includes turns and it includes a little bit of a hill, and the whole street is completely blocked off. So it's just people on bikes and that's it. Then there's an incredible mountain loop that goes through Bootleg Canyon where people go mountain biking all the time, and the trails are simply, they're fantastic. And earlier, I was telling Tim Grawl from the Crooked Cog that when I looked up on the hill, it looked like a freeway. There were so many people on so many different varieties of mountain bikes, from regular conventional 26-inch wheeled bikes to 29-inch wheeled bikes to everything in between, because now this 650B wheel size is also becoming popular. Well, yesterday, the first day of the outdoor demo, Interbike says that they had over 3,000 bicycle retailers visiting Bootleg Canyon in Boulder City. And today there had to have been more, because by lunchtime, you couldn't walk through portions of the demo. It was simply that crowded. Now, of course, I'm sure the weather didn't hurt at all. Yesterday was about 75 degrees. Today was probably a little bit warmer. Today started with an industry ride, and you're going to hear a little bit more about that in a few minutes. There were probably 300 to 400 people out on bikes. You didn't have to bring your own. Remember, all these bike companies had demo bikes. So make a reservation with the bike company, perhaps the day before. Get out there early this morning. They'll adjust the bike for you. And then you got to ride a brand new 2008 model year bike on about a 25-mile course. It was a little bit of a hammer fest because everybody was trying to outdo themselves. But it was a great ride from Bootleg Canyon to Lake Mead and back. Now, they've changed the outdoor demo area a little bit this year, and in my opinion, they've improved the outdoor demo. They moved it about 350 yards to the west. There's all sorts of new landscaping. It's a much better organization. The parking is better, and it was really great. According to a press release I saw, it's about 65,000 square feet of space that they sold. And what is also interesting, remember I mentioned a few moments ago that I rode a Trek Madone today. Now, Trek does not attend the indoor portion of Interbike because they have their own trade show back at their factory that's just for Trek dealers. But Trek does show up. They have a very large presence bringing mountain bikes and road bikes. And in some ways, being able to ride the bikes is a lot better than actually seeing them on the show floor. So this outdoor demo is really fantastic. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to play the interviews that I did. And again, what I'm trying to do is give you a sense of what is out there at the outdoor demo. I simply can't talk to everybody out there. Now, the first thing that I saw that caught my eye was a unique product that would be for your mountain bike, tires, that would replace your inner tube. And I'll let them tell you a little bit about it. I'm with Wade from Tire Balls, and I mean, it sounds like a funny name, so without my describing it, since you're the designer, Wade, tell me what Tire Balls are.
Well, Tire Balls is a multiple cell tire inflation system. Traditionally, all pneumatic tires were inflated by a single cell, a single vulnerable cell. So you puncture a tire, you lose all the air in the tire. I was involved for about 35 years in off-road motorcycle racing. My son was also involved, and he was actually 9-time national champion in off-road cross-country racing. And about 10 years ago, Michelin developed a foam inner tube system called the Bib Moose. And we used that system, and there were some features about it that were undesirable. So we started brainstorming about what could we do to get the advantages of air, the adjustability of air, but not have the flat issue. So it just came to me in a dream that a tennis ball is about the size of a front motorcycle tire. So the next day I went out and bought 10 cans of tennis balls. 29 of them filled the front tire, and it was unbelievable. The first time I rode it, you could feel something that I had never felt with a motorcycle tire before. The plushness and the progressive suspension characteristic that these multiple cells added to the tire. As it turned out, a tennis ball has 10 pounds of pressure in it, and that was ideal for a motorcycle. So it really was phenomenal, the suspension plushness that this system added to the vehicle. Of course, it was originally designed to be a flat-proof alternative, but the performance advantages far outweighed that for off-road motorcycles, and we immediately went into ATVs. So starting in 2004, we have been marketing this for off-road motorcycle and ATV use. Well, the same kind of advantages we saw for those vehicles apply to off-road bicycle racing as well. So that's why we're here. We've developed the product to fit the size range of mountain bike, downhill, cross-country types of bicycles. And we've had the product tested with about 5 different people. We would like to get about 100 more what we're calling beta test riders for the next 3 months to give us some really serious feedback on about 10 events and then significant events that they would ride. And that's our whole purpose here, is to sign up about 100 people in a lot of different venues, different skill level riders. We don't want just all top pros. We want the broad range of rider to see if the benefits will translate to all of those riders.
So tell me, just describe for me, because it's not a visual medium, because I see it here, but we have to describe for the listeners what we're looking at. Describe what the tire balls look like, how they're made, how they get put into the tire, how the tire goes on, how they're inflated, what happens if there's a flat, et cetera.
Sure. Well, I mentioned tennis balls earlier. Well, the balls, the cells that we made for the mountain bikes are more cylindrical shaped rather than spherical shaped. And they have a valve in them similar to a sports ball. So the pressure is adjustable. You adjust the pressure to a target that before you install them in the tire.
So unlike an inner tube, these are inflated before you even put it on the rim.
That's correct. And everybody would ask, man, isn't that a challenge to mount it on the rim? Well, it's really quite simple for bicycles. It's a lot easier for bicycles than it is for motorcycles and ATVs. We supply with the kit some little Velcro cinch strips that hold the tire in a C shape that keeps the balls captive. And then you cinch these Velcro strips down to where the tire is close to the rim, and then you just use two long tire irons. We use motorcycle tire irons, which are about 11 inches long. You can't use the little 3-inch plastic ones like traditionally people would use to mount bicycle tires.
So how many cells go in a traditional 26-inch mountain bike tire?
28 to 29. Really, there is some variation in the tire carcasses from the different brands, the different manufacturers, but what we've seen so far is 28 to 29.
And so how much pressure would you put in them? And then, of course, the most important question, what happens if one does puncture? Oh, and what are they made out of?
Well, they're made from polyurethane. It's a very, very abrasion and puncture-resistant material. Now, you still can puncture them. There's no doubt about it. The typical kind of rim pinch event that you would have with an inner tube has no effect. I mean, it would have to be a catastrophic hit on something that you did not anticipate before you could potentially rim pinch one of these.
But I suppose they could puncture. So what happens if it punctures?
Well, because you basically have more cells in the tire than it takes to fill it, in about 1 to 2 revolutions of the tire, the rest of the balls redistribute themselves, so the tire's still full. You don't have a flat spot anymore. The balls are lubricated also, and it helps that happen a lot faster. And then, of course, the rougher the terrain you're riding on, the faster that redistribution occurs.
So about how many would need to be gone before you'd
you'd have to open up that tire and replace them or patch them?
Well, we have not found a way to patch them. So they are, you replace them. Probably it would be in the neighborhood of 3 to 4 before the tire would actually feel low enough that you could actually detect it. Now, they do create a bulge. Each one will create a bulge on the sidewall. So just by counting the bulges on it, you know whether you've actually got one flat or not. We put a sticker on the rim that lists the number of cells that are mounted in the tire and what pressure you ran. So if when you go to change tires, you think, well, maybe that was a little stiffer than I'd like. Then you know what pressure you started. You can readjust the pressure to a different level if that's what you desire for your new tire.
Now, you're in what you call beta test right now. If somebody wants to contact you to be a part of that program, how would they do that?
Well, you can get on our website. That beta test application is on our website as of Monday or Tuesday next week. It's tireballs.com.
And when you do go to market, any idea of anticipated price to the consumer?
Based on the pricing that we currently have for ATVs and motorcycles, it's going to be less than $150 a wheel. We're not absolutely sure what it's going to be yet. And if we've got to make any significant changes before we actually go to the production. Right now, the beta test samples, that's the best guess right now.
Okay, so if you want to become a beta tester and you're a heavy-duty mountain bike user, go to www.tireballs.com and sign up. Wade, thanks so much.
Thank you very much. All right, thank you.
Now, from talking to Wade, I went over to talk to my good friend Tim Jackson from Mozzie Bicycles, and he put me on one of his bikes. I went out and rode it, and then we had a conversation about the bike I rode, as well as the changes that are going on in the Mozzie line. We all know that Mozzie is a brand that's well known for racing. It's Dave Stoller's bike from Breaking Away. But Tim has really done some really interesting things with the brand, and he'll tell you about that in this interview.
I am with fellow spokesman Tim Jackson. We're at the, surprise, the Mozzie booth. I just finished riding the 3VC, which is a carbon fiber road bike. Tell me a little bit about it.
Well, it's internally lugged. What you've got is a full monocoque front end that's bonded to lug construction back end. So you are able to fine-tune the ride characteristic a little bit better. For example, the seat stays that are on the 56-centimeter that you rode don't need to be as stiff as the seat stays that are on the 61-centimeter that I ride. So that way we're able to fine-tune that and give it a ride that suits the size as opposed to just being a generic, everything gets the same thing. So it kind of goes back to the old days of making steel bikes where you use a different tube for a different size.
So tell me a little bit about the ride characteristics that you get as a result of that construction.
Well, with that construction, what you get is, as you've noted, the back end of the bike feels very stiff, and it's good stiffness for seated climbing and for sprinting because of not only from the tube construction, but also from the shape of the tubes. Looking at the seat stays, they have that nice little arc to them, and what that arc does is it helps to improve the rear braking, but it also allows for better power transfer. It just stiffens up the whole back end. And the guys on the ANF Pro Team love it. You know, it was great. I tell the story all the time, but at their training camp, when they first got their bikes, I was getting phone calls and emails the whole week saying, this is the best bike I've ever had. And these are guys who make a living doing it. So, you know, as a product guy, it makes you feel pretty good.
And you too can own one as well, even though these guys make a living on theirs.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And it's the same frame that they race on, same frame and fork.
That's great. Okay, so, but looking around the booth, Mozzie's pretty much known for their racing heritage. I'm seeing bikes that don't look like that. Explain that to me.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff in the line now that's not what would be considered a traditional Mozzie in the sense that it's not a race bike. And that's, you know, where the history and the heritage of the brand is obviously very strong in that. But you look around and you see the flat bar road bike, the Cafe Racer series.
Hold on. Flat bar road bike. Why do I want a flat bar road bike?
Well, let's say you're just looking to bang out a few fitness miles every day, or maybe you're just a commuter. Being in that low slung drop bar position isn't necessarily the most comfortable position. And for some levels of visibility is not the best position, because in a more upright position, you can see traffic a little bit better. So by being more upright, being able to scan the horizon a little bit better for what's coming at you in a commuter situation, that helps.
So a commuter bike, fitness bike, but at the same time, it's got the lineage and the feel in a lot of ways of a road bike?
Absolutely. There's a lot of flat bar road bikes that are on the market that are essentially just a mountain bike with a flat bar and larger wheels. This is actually built off of one of our road frames, so it has a very road geometry. So the handling is very quick and agile. Again, another great feature for someone who's going to be riding in traffic or doing other forms of commuting. And as a fitness rider, you know, there's a lot of people who want to just get a few miles to get some exercise that don't want to be in that low slung drop bar position. But they also don't want to be on their mountain bike because it's just less efficient for road riding. So this is something that kind of cuts between the two and gives that more upright position, but still that road handling.
Okay, so on the far end of that is the Speciale. Tell me about that bike.
Absolutely. The Solville is the luscious curved tube bike that has just really done well for us. I think I've probably sent those out on demo rides already more than I have the Carbon Wonder bikes. People are just really falling in love with that simple 8-speed internal rear hub with a coaster brake and leather saddle, natural cork grips, simple alloy fenders. I mean, the reason it's called Soulville is because we wanted to use the word soul, because that's exactly what the bike has. It's just a lot of soul.
Now, admittedly, everybody that's walking around here, they're bike geeks, right? And they're into their high-end mountain bikes or high-end road bikes. How do they respond to that Nexus hub?
They love it. You know, it's just, it's simple. It's simplicity. And I keep calling it kind of like being a kid again, where you have that feeling of just simplicity. You know, you jump on your bike and you ride. And the 8-speed shifter, being just a simple twist shifter, the Revo shifter, is so convenient. It's just right there at the bar. So there's not even a thumb lever. It's a simple twist of the wrist. And the coaster brake, I mean, who doesn't like to skid from time to time? I mean, there's just a lot of fun in the simplicity of that. And, you know, I call it a one-hand bike because you ride it with one hand on the bar and one hand holding onto your favorite coffee as you're riding around on Sunday, you know, going to get lunch or breakfast. I mean, it's just the ultimate cruise-around bike. And what's really funny, well, I shouldn't say funny, but what's really great about it to me is that it really appeals to shop guys. Every other shop guy that walks in goes, I want one of those for me. I mean, it'd be great for the shop. Yeah, don't get me wrong, but I want one for me. I mean, people who spend a lot of time around bikes and know something about bikes and have been around them, they look at that and go, yeah, I want one of those. And so, again, as a product guy, that, you know, makes your heart flutter a bit.
So if you're looking for a high-end road bike, or if you're looking for anything between that and even your cruiser bike, you can get them at Mozzie. Thanks, Tim. I appreciate it.
Not a problem, David. Thank you.
One of the things that I noticed about the Mozzie bikes this year is that they really are one of the brands that is catching a lot of buzz at the show. As a matter of fact, Tim was sold out this morning of bikes to be used for the tour of Lake Mead. And everybody that was on the Mozzies was saying really great things about them. So I think that Tim has a winner on his hands, and he's going to be one busy man over the next few months. Now, another company that was getting a lot of buzz at the outdoor demo this year is a company called Spot Bikes. Now, what makes their bikes unique is that the bikes are not driven by a chain. Instead, it's a belt drive system. Now, that may sound quirky to you, but I'm telling you that everyone who rode one of these bikes over the last 2 days couldn't say enough about it. Now, if you're like me, when you hear about replacing a chain with a belt, well, you get a little bit skeptical, and certainly, at a minimum, you have a number of questions, and I certainly did. And so I sat down with the CEO of Spot Bikes and asked him those questions, and he made a believer out of me. Take a listen and see if he makes a believer out of you.
I'm with Nick from Spot Bicycles, and we are looking at an innovative product that everybody here at the show has been talking about, and you're going to have to describe it because they can't see it. What is this that we're looking at?
What you're seeing here is actually what's called Carbon Drive Systems. It's an innovative new drivetrain that we've brought to the bicycle market that eliminates greasy chains, all the nonsense that goes along with those chains. So what we see in front of us here is a fantastic carbon fiber core belt with specifically machined sprockets sitting around it.
So I look at this and I say, it's a belt. And what if it breaks or what if it stretches? How does that work?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Those are the questions that we're getting most often right now. And the truth is that you see 8 cords of carbon lay in the center of this belt, and they're individually laid up, these cords of carbon, with a urethane coating around the outside, and then you have a nylon, basically a nylon coating that goes around that urethane, and then you have a secondary urethane coating that goes around the outside of that. The tensile strength of this initially is almost equal with that of a chain, and over time, where a chain loses some of its tensile strength and you get a set in of those of the bushings on the chain, you don't have that with this belt. So the long-term tensile strength of this chain is better than, or this belt is better than a chain. What's further is that the same technology is running on the Ducati Monster motorcycle. It's running on Harley Davidson. It's running on 1,000 horsepower blower engines that you see in NHRC. So the technology is proven. It's about a year old. It's really innovative and fantastic.
Yeah. And you've got everything from 29er bikes to regular 26 and mountain bikes and road bikes. What kind of an application do you see this going to in the future? And on your bikes, what's the typical rider who's going to want a system like this?
Yeah, I think those are two very good questions. I think that to answer the latter, what kind of rider wants this system, there's two riders that want this system. One is the rider that just absolutely hates maintenance. The second rider is one who wants extremely high performance with incredible lightweight, with a silent ride, and that rides in really poor conditions. So we're headed in two directions. The one system is going to head towards initially the single speeder who's performance-oriented, who wants a bike that they can really rip on. The second is the commuter who rides every single day, who doesn't want to get grease chain on their pants. The commuter who doesn't want to think about their drivetrain, they just put it on the bike. One of the things that we've done is we've created an application that allows this particular system to work with a roll-off internal hub in addition to the SRAM Shimano Splined hubs. So what we're seeing is, you know, the possibility that we could really take derailleurs away. We can put derailleurs inside the hub and eliminate maintenance almost altogether.
Now, what about weight savings over a chain? What are you seeing there?
The belt itself is 52 grams. Most of your average chains weigh anywhere from 220 on the light end all the way up to 350 grams. So anywhere from not quite a half pound to a little over a half pound of weight savings just in the belt system alone.
Now, when I need to change my chain, I take a pin out, move the chain off the bike. What do you do in this case?
All this does is it changes the way that you pull a pin out. It changes the part of the bike that you pull a pin out, but the process is the same. Actually, if you could see this, you would see there's a keyed component on the frame itself, and it has two bolts in it. You take those bolts out, the keyed part comes out, and you pull the belt right off of your frame. The other, you know, application that we're seeing and we've had interest in is the elevated chainstay, where you really don't have to do anything. And we've had a couple of companies that build those kinds of bikes.
So, in the future, we're not only going to see it on spot brand bikes, but you're going to license the technology to other manufacturers as well.
Absolutely. Carbon Drive Systems is a separate entity from spot brand. Spot brand is a vehicle to release the product. Spot brand is a company that's well-respected in the single-speed community. It's well-respected in the hardcore riding community. Carbon Drive Systems partnered with Spot to perfect the product first so that it met Spot's sort of requirements for products being sophisticated and working effectively for its application. Once it met that standard, it was okay to be released. And then it meets the standards of our hardcore riders and can be sort of proliferated through the market. But the answer to your question is yes, absolutely. We want everybody to have it.
So this can be sort of a tough crowd here at the outdoor demo. What's day one's almost over. What's been the reaction of the riders as they come back with your demo bikes?
Frankly, you can even hear it. I'm almost beyond words in understanding the return and the excitement and people's just, you know, absolute passion for this product. So I'm very excited about their response. And that was great. It was awesome. We hear it in the background, and we've heard it all day.
Well, that's great. Good luck here at the show, and thanks for the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much.
Certainly an innovative design and something that I think is going to catch on in the industry. There was, like I said, just a lot of buzz about this product. People really seemed to like it, and I'm looking forward to seeing what happens with Spot as well as with their technology over the next few years. Now, speaking of interesting and innovative technology, give a listen to this interview with John and Chris from TerraSail.
So earlier today, I'm out riding a road bike, and I pull up next to what I thought was a sailboat. And instead, it's John from TerraSail, and he's on one of his bikes. And I'm here with John and Chris. And guys, tell me what I was looking at when I was out there on my road bike.
Well, what it is exactly is a TerraSail. It's a patented jib sail-based system. It's a universal kit that attaches to any recumbent trike, tadpole recumbent trike. And we've just recently put them up for sale. We've been a company for a little over a year, and about a year and a half now. And we're looking forward to Interbike this week.
So what you're looking at is a recumbent bike with what looks like you said, a jib sail on the front. Where'd the idea come from to do something like this?
Well, like I said, the idea was actually my father had an original idea of using wind for transportation on a recumbent trike. And Chris and I were both engineers from the U.S. Merchant Academy. And at the time, we were on an oceanographic ship off the coast of the Philippines, and I get this email requesting assistance on this crazy idea of using wind to legally sail down the road. And I thought about it, and I ended up getting Chris to give me a hand, and we kind of formed a company, and we've been in business for the last year now. So
describe the design to me. How does it work? What's it made of? Tell me a little bit about it.
Well, actually, this is our third generation design. We started off with a huge boom, and that's actually what we debuted at Interbike last year. We've come to this design now. It's much sleeker. It's completely aluminum and carbon fiber. The mast, the bowsprit, all of that's carbon fiber, and all of the individual pieces are aluminum. So it's much more lightweight. It's compact. Actually, it fits in the back of a... Heck, I've traveled with it in a Mustang before. So it will fit in virtually any car. You can take it anywhere you want, and it attaches to any trike.
Do you have to have some experience sailing? Do you have to understand how to sail in order to make this work?
Well, that's actually a great... That's a common question, and it's something that makes this system so great because it's entirely intuitive. It's the ASM that we designed, which stands for Automatic Sheet Management System. It keeps the tension on the line, and it will take care of all of the sailing for you. It's a self-tacking jib, so the wind will take the sail exactly where it needs to go. All you have to do is grab the line and put a little tension in it in order to propel yourself forward.
Now, is this something that's street legal? Can I actually put this on a recumbent bike and go down the street of any major city in the U.S.?
We like to say that anywhere you can ride a bike, any road that you can ride a bike, you can ride a TerraSail. It's 50 state street legal.
And so I got to think that you've got guys who are doing centuries and double centuries, and they're loving taking the TerraSail. Tell me what kind of experiences people have had doing things like that.
Well, the first thing they say when they see us sailing down the road is they say that's cheating.
Of course.
They say, like I said, people enjoy it a lot. They have a lot of fun using it. It makes the recumbent cycling very enjoyable. It makes it use the wind to sail down the road and makes it really fun.
Where can people find this? Is this something that they buy directly from you, or can they get it from a dealer?
Well, right now we're in the market. We're trying to get retail shops and distributors right now. Currently it's available online on our website, www.terrasail.com. That's spelled with a P, not a T. It's a common thing. So terrasail.com, it's available for $33.50.
That's great. Well, we'll put a link in the show notes, and thanks so much for talking to me about it. It's an innovative product.
Thanks a lot, Dave.
Thanks for your time.
You may recall in the early days of the Fredcast, we did a segment on the Fredcast. It was called Bents on the Fredcast, and it was all about recumbent bicycles. And I have to tell you, this recumbent bicycle looked like a lot of fun, something I'd really like to try. I'm a sailor. I've been a sailor for a few years, and this just looked like a great convergence of sailing and cycling. So go ahead and check it out. Of course, there's links to TerraSail and every company that I've talked to in the show notes, and you can find those at www.thefredcast.com. And up at the top of the page, there's a few tabs. And if you click on show notes, you will find the notes for this show and every show. This is episode number 81. Well, as I mentioned several times, today was the tour of Lake Mead. It was a great ride. The weather was perfect. I was a little worried it was going to be cold this morning, but it was a great morning for a ride. And after the ride, I caught up with Rich Kelly from Interbike. And here's what he had to say about Interbike, about the outdoor demo, and about the tour of Lake Mead.
Just finished the road ride this morning. I'm with Rich Kelly from Interbike. What do you call that ride again?
It's now called the Tour of Lake Mead.
And I have to ask, because you used to call it the
Hangover Ride.
And I guess that just really wasn't very politically correct, was it?
We had a few questions following all the doping concerns at the Tour de France this year. So we had a few people mention it. But I saw in a few of the schedules that have been posted by some of the magazines that it's the Tour of Lake Mead, in parentheses, Hangover Ride. So I think it'll never lose its sort of, you know, organic name, which is Hangover Ride.
Although I don't think anybody with a hangover is going to get out here at 7 o'clock in the morning to get their bike.
Yeah, I think you're right about that one.
So tell us a little bit about the ride. Tell us the distance, a little bit about the route, and how many people you think were out there today.
You know, just eyeballing it, it looked like about 350 people. We do a count at the entrance to the park, so we'll hear a little bit later. But it's a 24-mile out-and-back loop to Lake Mead. We have rolling police closure for a little stretch of highway, which is a scorching fast downhill about 6 miles to the entrance of the park. And there are some hammerheads at the front, and I hate to admit it, but I was dropped on the descent and sort of used the excuse of I'm the host, I'm the MC from Interbike, so I'll slow up and chat with people on the way and casual. But it was an awesome ride. It's beautiful, you know, beautiful sunny day. There's a nice breeze, so it's perfect weather.
Yeah, it's a nice day. Not too hot. It was a really nice ride. And you're right, it was a blistering downhill. But then, of course, on the way back, it becomes an uphill.
Yeah, it wasn't that bad. You know, we're the, you know, Ross, a reporter from the Boston Globe, and Carlton Reed was there. First time meeting him, and Uwe Weisflog, who's our European agent. You know, great conversation on the way back, talking advocacy, talking bike safety, you know, all those things that we, they're important to us. And it was just, an awesome ride. Mavic provided neutral support, so the Mavic motorcycles were zipping up and back into cars. And so you get to, you know, feel a little bit of that the proness of having, you know, Mavic support there.
And one of the great things is everybody's riding brand new bikes that they've borrowed from their favorite manufacturers and then talking about them. And you're right, there was a lot of networking going on. I met a lot of great people on the ride. Whose idea was it, and when did this start?
This is the fourth edition, and, you know, I hate to say I wasn't around for the first one, but I think Scott Montgomery from Scott Bicycles, I think, was a strong, you know, backer in the early days. We've always wanted to do rides and include rides in the into the outdoor demo, and it just kind of grew, and now we're, you know, it's growing by leaps and bounds each year. And, you mentioned something about all these people that love bikes riding new bikes. One of the things I noticed, all these retailers that are proponents of, you know, really quality, you know, scientific bike fits, and we're all out there riding ill-fitting, ill-adjusted bikes on a ride. Everyone's got a saddle. It's a little too high, a little too low, a little too, you know, stretched out. It's just kind of humorous, but an awesome ride.
The best we have is our pedals and our shoes. Otherwise, we're very misadjusted. Let's talk about the outdoor demo really quickly. It's a lot bigger this year, isn't it?
It's more spread out. It's not all in one area. So there's really two distinct areas. There's an upper paved circle, and then a lower by the front door. There's the traditional sand and rocks, and it's great for a lot of the road companies that are up here on the road loop. One of the fun things is Cervelo has a time trial start ramp, you know, at the top of the road loop. So you borrow a Cervelo, climb up to the top of the ramp. The guy holds your bike. All of the Cervelo employees go down, line the start ramp. One guy, you know, does the hand countdown. One of the other guys goes beep, beep, beep. And then they all cheer in Italian and French, you know, as you ride off. And I've seen everybody that goes down there just hammers off the line as if they're, starting the prologue for the tour. So it's just a great event. Yeah, it's a great venue. I think people are really liking it. It's a little more groomed and polished.
Well, it's a good event this year. I appreciate it. Rich, thanks so much, and good luck the rest of the week.
Thanks. Great seeing you again.
So you may be wondering, what bike did I ride today at the Tour de Lake Mead? Because we can't call it the Hangover Ride, right? Well, I went and saw my friends over at Blue Competition Bicycles, and instead of riding a road bike, I decided instead to ride one of their cross bikes because I wanted to get a feel for what those cross bikes are like. So after my ride, I had a little bit of a conversation with the folks over at Blue Competition Cycles, not just about the cross bike, but about their entire line. And here's how that went.
I'm with Chris Pick. We're at the Blue Competition Bicycles booth, and I rode one of their cross bikes today at the industry morning ride. Tell me a little bit about your cross bike and what makes it unique.
What makes it unique is we've actually been able to develop the correct geometry that's needed for cross racing. And through that, we've actually sponsored a couple of Italian kids, Davide Fertine and Luca Damiana, who ride for the Colavita team. And last year, Davide was able to win a UCI cross race. So we knew we had picked the correct geometry, the correct style of carbon tubes and aluminum lug mixture, and also a full carbon fork. So then we decided to put a cool paint job on there that's kind of related to the red clay we have in Georgia. And, bam, it's spot on, perfect.
And, you know, I don't know, we maybe rode 25 miles today, something like that, and it's not a bad road bike either.
Well, that's one thing that we've been trying to market very heavily. You know, you can either put drop bars on it and use it as a road bike, or, you know, you can put on your cross wheels, go hit the off-road sections, or even put on some riser or flat mountain bike bars and use it as a commuter bike. And we will actually have two examples of that at the show tomorrow with our new paint jobs.
So really, it's a good all-around bike.
Absolutely. It's perfect for everything. You can ride your mountain bike shoes, mountain bike pedals, get off, walk through the mud, go to the beach. It's absolutely perfect for that.
So what else is new from Blue this year?
Well, we've upgraded our road bikes. Our RC7 is now going to be an RC8. We've changed the fork to a more aerodynamic fork because of our sponsorship with USA Triathlon. And then we've made some few minor details, changes with the adjustment barrels and the cable stops to bring up the jewelry effect. Because the frame, I can't make the frame any better. It's as good as it's going to get. I have to redesign a whole new type of road bike in order for 2009. So I already started working on that.
So I know we talked about it last year, but just briefly, describe your frame construction in your road bike.
Well, we actually use this for any of our products that have carbon fiber on our bikes, whether it's the road bike, the cross bike, the CXC that we just spoke about. We always use T700 carbon, which is the best carbon that's the most economical to put on bicycles. I mean, you can go higher. You can go 800, 900, 1,000. But the increase in cost to us and to the consumer is not worth the amount of performance gain. So we stick with the T700 and we don't stray away from it. No 300, no 600, no 500, because that's the cheaper carbon and you're not able to create as quality of a product.
And tell me about your mountain bike.
Well, the mountain bike is obviously the same type of carbon, since I just mentioned that. It's an aluminum lug construction. The one reason that we got into making the hardtail mountain bike is we sponsored a guy named Seth Wheeling. And Seth Wheeling, over the last 2 years, for 2006 and 5, won the National Xterra Championships. So we wanted to make sure that we got a mountain bike for him, which mostly he uses a hardtail, except for some certain races that require a full suspension, such as the World Championships in Maui and a few other races. So we created a prototype, had him race on it during 2005. We changed some things, made some tweaks, and got to the model we have, the XC. And last year he won the U.S. National Championships on it again, and we're quite happy with it. So it's going really well for us. We're in the process of making a full suspension, but it's a detailed process. There's a lot of things going on the full suspension that we have to pay attention to, especially patents. Yeah.
Well, I enjoyed riding the cross bike today. Tell everybody where they can find you on the web.
They can find us at rideblue.com.
We're good. Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for coming to try out our bikes.
So after a good hammer fest this morning with the industry and riding several other bikes today, I walked by a booth that was also getting some buzz. And one of the reasons was because Ed Begley Jr., the celebrity and well-known environmentalist, was standing there talking about these bikes that were electric hybrid bicycles. So I took one out for a test ride, and remember I told you that the road course has a hill in it, and then once you get off the road course, there's a fairly decent little hill that you've got to climb up to get back to the demo area. And on both hills, sure, I was pedaling, and you'll hear more about that in a second, but I wasn't working the way I was working when I was riding a conventional bike. So why don't we let the folks from the company tell you a little bit about the bike and a little bit about why I wasn't working when I was going up those hills.
I'm with Larry Peasy from Curry Technologies. You're the CEO of the company, and I just rode your iZip Express. Describe that bike that I just rode.
Well, the iZip Express is a hybrid electric bicycle that is really a breakthrough in performance technology for electrics. We believe that the Express will get a lot of people out of their automobiles and get them on two wheels for transportation, real transportation, and even for recreation and fitness riding, because as you experienced, it correlates human power input, muscle power, with electric power. So it's not like you're just sitting back and twisting a throttle like you would on a motorcycle. You're actually riding it like a bicycle. The wonderful thing about it is that it has tremendous range, up to 75 miles on a single charge, and it has great power, enough power to climb a 15% grade hill at speeds of up to 20 miles an hour. So it's really a breakthrough in electric bicycles.
That would have been a great bike for me this morning. Just, you know, where were you this morning? What I found, what surprised me, was exactly what you said. When I rode it, I expected to push a button and have it just go. And that isn't the way it works. You pedal, and then you get the assist. Describe the technology.
Well, it's a really interesting technology. It's a Swiss invention that we license from its inventor, a company called Dolphin in Basel, Switzerland. Interesting patent where it takes a planetary gear like was built into a three-speed hub and has a freewheel screwed onto the right side of the hub and a cog on the left side of the hub. The right side of the hub uses the human power input with a chain and a derailleur, just like you would on any conventional bicycle. And the left side has a 750-watt electric motor attached to a belt drive pulley. And the electronics interpret your cadence and torque and the human power input, and it matches your human power input with the electric power input, and it spins in both directions through the planetary, driving the wheel forward. It's really a pretty ingenious invention, and I think the best part about it is that it doesn't feel unusual. It feels like you're riding a bicycle, but you're getting this wonderful electric assist. So it begins to change the way you think about using a bicycle. You know, perhaps you would never consider taking your bike out for a business meeting when you know you had to travel 25 miles in the morning over a steep hill. I commute about 35 miles on one from my home through a canyon where there's about 8 miles of climbing between 8 and 15% grade. And I can do it with a computer briefcase on my back and in work clothes and arrive at work unperspired. It's pretty amazing.
And you've got a couple of models here with different sized assist pods. Explain that.
Well, Curry and on our iZip line of bikes makes a full range, over 20 models in the line. Just like a conventional push bike, electrics are very function specific. Different kinds of bikes for different kinds of intents and different kinds of riding. So we have bikes that don't look at all like electric bikes, which I think is also a breakthrough in a lot of ways, where the batteries are concealed inside the frame, and it uses a small compact hub motor that looks, well, it's not much bigger than a three-speed internally geared hub. And a lot of people that were turned off to electric bicycles when they looked like these funky machines with big battery boxes hanging off of them have really taken to these bikes that don't look like anything unusual. So very appealing. They're called Pedelecs, or in essence pedal assist bikes, and they comply with a lot of the requirements around the world, in Western Europe in particular, from a power and wattage perspective, and are very friendly to ride. They're a little more subtle from a power perspective, but again, not everyone needs the ability to travel 20 miles an hour up a hill. So again, really depends on what kind of riding you're doing.
And how far will your typical, like the Express, how far will it go on a charge?
The Express, on its lowest power setting, has five different settings for power, will travel 75 miles on a single charge. On its highest power setting, a little over 30 miles.
And how long does it take to charge one?
Well, you can get about 80% of the battery capacity in about 45 minutes. To top it off to 100%, it takes about 4 hours from a complete discharge.
And what kind of batteries do you use? In other words, is there memory in these batteries? That's something that the consumer needs to be worried about?
No. We've in 2008, we've switched over to exclusively lithium-ion batteries in all of our higher-range bikes. On our lower price points, we're still using lead-acid batteries, but they work quite well also. Lithium batteries are basically the same configuration of the batteries you might have on a laptop computer. So they don't last forever, but generally you can get between 700 and 800 recharge cycles out of a battery pack like this. And then once the recharge cycles start to diminish, you can replace just the batteries themselves.
And where can people get more information?
At izipusa.com, I-Z-I-P-USA.com.
Great, Larry, thanks for your time.
Sure, thank you.
Okay, last but not least, I have an interview with a company called Stork, and actually with the founder of the company, Marcus Stork. When I was out on several rides over the last day and a half, when I'd be on a road bike, invariably someone would pull up next to me on a bike with a name on the down tube that said Stork. And invariably they would ask me, have you ridden this bike? And when I would say no, they would say, you must go ride it. So I made sure to get over to the Stork booth, and I did ride the bike. And of everything that I rode over the last day and a half, at least as far as road bikes are concerned, this was my favorite. So afterwards, I had a chance and I sat down with Marcus Stork and discussed with him a little bit about his bikes and about the technology behind them.
I am with Marcus Stork from Stork Bicycle.
By the way, do you notice I sound out of breath? You think I really enjoyed riding this bike? Yeah, just a little bit. Let's get back to the interview.
I am with Marcus Stork from Stork Bicycles, and I just rode your newest carbon road bike, which is called?
Fascinario.
You asked me when I came back what I thought, and all I said was, wow. Why do you think I said that?
It's normal. First time when the people are riding a lightweight bike, then they're expecting not to have a stiff bike. But when you ride a Fascinario, then you have a stiff and a light and a very durable bike.
So let's talk about it. It's a carbon bike. Is it a monocoque construction?
It's a monocoque construction with a new process we call the VVC process. VVC stands for vacuum void control process. The problem is with the monocoque, when you're expanding the inner tube, then the resin is not perfectly distributed. So in some areas you have more resin, in others you have less resin. So with that new process, we're combining a monocoque with an autoclave. So we were sucking the unnecessary amount of resin out of the frame, and we're distributing the resin a lot better through the carbon material. So what it does is we don't have to lower the amount of layers. We're just lowering the unnecessary amount of resin with the frame.
And this results in, from personal experience, an extremely lightweight but very stiff bike. Acceleration, uphills, even cruising. I mean, it feels like an old steel frame.
A lot of editors have said that this is a bike of a new dimension because of weight, because of stiffness, but also the way how the frame still damps. And this, again, comes by the technology. I have a tube in my hand, and when I squeeze it, then you can see that the tube even flexes. And some of our vendors have made some tests where they use some impact tests on the frame, and they learned that our material is accepting something like compression a lot better than other frames which they have as an open mold model. And I think this will become more and more important because we have opened the box of Pandora by getting so light. At the moment, we have a world record. Our Fascinario 0.7 has a weight set weight frame fork and headset of 1,186 gram and 57 centimeter. And we're showing at Interbike this year our new Fascinario 0.7 IS. IS stands for integrated system. So I have developed a new full ceramic headset bearing. I have incorporated the bearing into the bottom bracket. And we're then at a set weight of 1,050 gram. And my big dream is to be within the next 2 years under 1,000 gram for frame, fork, and headset in 57 centimeter.
Now, before we started recording, you were telling me a little bit about your history, and you designed bikes when you were very young.
I sold my first bike when I was age 6 in my parents' store. My grandfather was a professional road racer in 1920 for the Opel team, and I started selling bikes, and of course in my parents' store, but I also designed my first frames with an Italian vendor when I was 15 years old, and I started my own company when I was 22 years old.
So who would you say that this bike is for? What kind of a rider would want a Fascinario?
I think important is that everybody out there believes that pro riders are using the best material. It's not the truth. The pro rider is using the material he's getting paid for. and some of the pro riders are using 7-8 bikes a year. Our riders are doing 20,000 kilometers, 30,000 kilometers a year, so our bikes are a lot more ridden than the pro bikes.
So you would say that this is good for a racer, this is good for a century, double century rider, an all-around roadie?
Yes, of course. I think everybody who likes quality and likes a good ride would love a bicycle from Stork.
Now, when I was out there, I stopped and I looked over the bike and I saw that you have these zip wheels that have your name on it. Tell me about those.
I know Andy Arding pretty well, and we said, okay, I have some ideas about a new rim profile. So we lowered the height of the profile from 808 to 69, so by 12 millimeter. I lowered the widths by 1 millimeter, so our wheel is a little bit lighter, still very stiff, and not so, I would say, dangerous when you have a lot of wind, like in Hawaii and so on. So we created an own wheel set, and we're very successfully already. And to show that's our own wheel set, also we have our Stork logo in the dimples.
Now, is this something that people can buy without getting the Stork bike?
Yes, of course. It's available all through Holley. And we also have a joint venture at the moment with Synthase. So we created some Stork Synthase parts. And you will see within the next years a lot of joint ventures where I have friends within the industry and say they're making a wonderful job. So why not join forces there and doing good stuff together?
Marcus, thank you so much. Good luck at the show.
Thanks a lot.
So that's it. Those were my interviews from this year's Outdoor Demo. And I know this show is going a little bit long. I sort of took 2 days, or at least a day and a half, and put them together into one. I hope that you don't mind. I've got two more shows coming. I've got 2 days being on the show floor, as well as an episode of The Spokesman. And I may drop that into the Fredcast feed also. We'll see whether or not I do that over the next couple of days. Well, there is an event coming up, or two actually, that I wanted to tell you about. And the first is actually taking place here in Las Vegas as part of the Interbike trade show going on. They've been able to schedule the USA Criterium Finals on Thursday night during Interbike. It's September 27th, 2007. So if you are here in Las Vegas, you can go and check it out. And I've put a link in the show notes so that you can get all of the information. But in addition to the Criterium Finals, there is another race that's taking place, and that's the Industry Cup race. And this is taking place between the Pro Women's and Pro Men's races. And this is going to pit teams from Interbike exhibiting companies against each other. So if I thought that today's casual ride was a hammer fest, just wait till Thursday. So if you're in the Vegas area, you do have the opportunity to go and check that out, and I hope that you do. Now, there's one more event that I want to tell you about, and this one's taking place this weekend, and I was alerted about this event by Fredcast listener Todd. This one is called the Dam to Dam Ride. It's taking place September 29th, 2007. That's this weekend. And this ride is to benefit the Mike Utley Foundation, and of course it's taking place in Wenatchee, Washington. Let me read from the website so you understand what the Mike Utley Foundation is all about. And for those of you who, like me, are parrot heads, this is not the Mike Utley that's a member of Jimmy Buffett's Coral Reefer Band. It was November 17th, 1991, and the Detroit Lions had scored in a crucial game against the Los Angeles Rams. Mike Utley felt he was invincible at 6 foot 6 inches and 315 pounds. He was at the top of his game, a champion, and thrilled to be doing what he loved, playing American football. Mike Utley was attempting to throw a block during a pass play when he went down, and he immediately knew that something was wrong. An eerie silence descended over the stadium as Mike lay there motionless. When they wheeled him off the field, Mike gave the crowd a thumbs up to let them know that he would return. Mike Utley, number 60, was paralyzed. Mike's courageous thumbs up gesture has come to symbolize his fighting spirit. In his own fight to walk, Mike has focused all of his energies towards others suffering from spinal cord injuries. The Mike Utley Foundation was founded in January 92 and is committed to providing financial support for rehabilitation, education, and research for spinal cord-related injuries. The 2007 Dam to Dam Thumbs Up Bike Tour will move everyone closer to the ultimate goal of finding a cure for spinal cord injuries. So this is going to be a great ride. It's going to take place along the Columbia River in eastern Washington, and it will give you the opportunity not just to have a great ride, but also to know that you're making a difference in the lives of those who are disabled through spinal cord injuries. You have the option of riding a 25, a 50, or a 100-mile ride with rest stops all along the route, and you can find further information by clicking the link in the show notes. Now, one last thing that I want to mention before we close the show out for tonight, and that is I want to give a shout-out to a bicycle dealer from North Dakota by the name of Don. Don knows who he is, because as I was leaving the parking lot at the outdoor demo today, Don walked up to me and he said, are you heading back to town? I told him that I was, and he said, do you mind if I get a ride? My buddy just went down, he cracked his helmet, and the paramedics took him to the hospital. And so, absolutely, I put Don in my car and took him right to Boulder City Hospital, and I don't know what happened to Don. I don't know what happened to his buddy. Don didn't think that the injury was going to be too bad, but I did want to send a shout-out to both Don and his buddy. Hopefully his buddy is doing well, and he'll be walking the show floor tomorrow. But just wanted you to know, Don, that I've been thinking about you and your friend ever since I dropped you off at the hospital, and I hope things are going well for both of you. Well, that's going to do it for the show for tonight. If you'd like to contact me and give me a little bit of feedback on how we're doing with our Interbike coverage, or if there's something you'd like me to cover, send me an email. The email address is thefredcast@gmail.com. You can visit the website anytime at www.thefredcast.com, where you can get show notes and links about everything we talked about, as well as additional information from time to time. You can also find information on how to send audio comments that we'll play on the show, including using our Fredcast listener hotline at area code 206-203-FRED, or using our Skype hotline 435-258-6373. That's 435-258-6FRED. Or by going to thefredcast.com, there is a link on the right-hand side of the page that you can click and send an audio comment right from your own computer. So we're going to close this show the same way we opened it, with Happy by Jimmy Bratcher. Jimmy Bratcher can be found on the PodSafe Music Network, and this is PodSafe Cycling Music. For more PodSafe Music, go to music.podshow.com. So between tonight and tomorrow night, hope you've enjoyed the show. Hope you enjoy Jimmy's music. But most of all, enjoy the ride.